surface in half K3, but this is just a summary of what they are. And so this is based on two papers. One I had with Choi, is a student of Sheldon Katz. And this is last year, so it is. And then the other one is this year, so it was with Mingxin Huang and my student Porechkin, which actually applies for a job, and myself. So basically what the program would be is I want to define the refined stable pair invariants in the A model. So that is, so to say, where they count so basically refinement of the Pandra-Panda-Thomas invariants, which I have to explain. And then I want to say a little bit about the local Calabi-Yau that we are dealing with. So these are, as I said in the title, they are based on Del Pezzo surfaces, or basically the anti-canonical bundle over Del Pezzo surface, and the half K3. And then I wanted to use mirror symmetry, of course, to actually evaluate. I mean, on Toy Calabi-Yau, you can use a calculation which is very close to the definition, but in general, it's much more effective to calculate them with mirror symmetry. And this is using generalized holomorphic anomaly equation, which was proposed by Daniel Greffel and Johannes Walcher and Mingxin Huang and myself. And then finally, I want, so to say, to come to applications. And what I have, basically, if you think about physics, then the main applications are in geometric engineering. And so what we can do, so what is, so to say, most straightforward is actually the application to traditional gauge theory. So let me put this first. So traditional n equal to SUSY gauge theory. And what it does here is basically it defines these partition functions for certain series where we cannot write down the Lagrangian, and then it defines Nekrasov's partition function for this series where you cannot define them otherwise. And then there is an application to tensionless strings. And finally, I also think there is an application to PQ strings. So this has more to do with F theory, which maybe I can shortly mention. So that is the program. So of course, we know that the A model this calculates certain symplectic invariants. And they are also, in the A model for topological string, they are, so to say, all related to holomorphic curves, which is the critical point of the topological string. And there is a certain hierarchy. I mean, there first, in his historical hierarchy, there is the Gromov-Witten invariants, and then there are the Donaldson-Thomas invariants. And then what I'm using, I mean, actually, is this work of Pandria-Pande and Thomas. These are the so-called stable pair invariants. So these are, as far as the information goes about these curves, they are all more or less equivalent. But we find it in this paper with Sheldon, we find it, so to say, more most convenient to refine the stable pair invariant. So let me also give the reference to the paper with Maximilian Porechkin and Mingxin. Okay, so so they were defined basically by Pandharipande and Thomas in 2007, and so to say, these are the these are refinable. I mean, I don't want to say that the others are non-refinable, but these are, so to say, easily for us. So let me first say what a stable pair is. So we assume that M is some smooth Calabi-Yau threefold. And then we introduce a pure sheaf of complex dimension 1, of dimension 1. And this has a certain topological data, which we relate to the deep range charges. So first of all, there is this, there is the class in H2MZ, which on which, so to say, the two brain is supported. And then there is also the Euler number of the sheaf, which you can informally think as the number of the zero brains. And then there is a section in H naught of F, which generates F outside of finitely many points. So, so as I said, so informally, you can see this as describing, as the mathematical description of a bound state of a 1d6 brain, which wraps the total M, and then d2 and d0 brains. And so to say, because there's only one d6 brain, I also have to give the charges of this of these ones. so this is a bound state of these brains. And now the point is, or why Pandharipande and Thomas introduced it, was that it has a very, so to say, nice deformation theory, the modelized space of this object. So they introduced the modelized space of this object, which is, so to say, labeled by all the data, the M6. Yes, this is right. So so then this modelized space, this is the modelized space of stable pairs. And this has a symmetric abstraction theory. So basically, what you introduce this, I mean, you introduce a map from OM via S to F, and then this is the modelized space of this map that we are considering. And so it this abstract perfect has this, this symmetric abstraction theory is that the deformations, which would be in H01, no, sorry, they would be in, well, in X1 of H, H. They are, so to say, dual to the abstractions. And I mean, first of all, it follows from this that the virtual dimension of the modelized space is always zero. And the way to show that is basically because you have this omega zero, this omega three zero form in the Calabi-Yau, and then you use their duality. So this, sorry, this is also I. Thank you. So you use their duality with, let's say, this omega 3-0 form, which is nowhere vanishing on the Calabi-Yau exist, and then you get this structure. So this is due to this point. So, well, then, as I said, so the virtual dimension of this P is zero. And furthermore, if you do the virtual integral now, then you get immediately an integer number. So if you do some virtual integral, let's say over P and M beta, then well, you define the number, which occurs in the following a couple of times. So this is basically the trivial class integrated over M beta virtual. And this is minus one. I mean, in the simplest cases, so for instance, if the moduli space is smooth, then it would be Pn M beta, just the Euler number of Pn M beta. So this is in the simplest case. But anyway, it is always in Z. And these guys are called the PT invariants. And they are, so to say, contain the same information than the DT, and then the other symplectic invariants that I said. And that is essentially the fundamental conjecture that PT had, which they also proved in the torus case. So this is proved in torus case, or toric case. And that basically says, I mean, this is proved in this paper that I mentioned before. And so basically what is, I mean, in terms of partition functions, maybe most nice to write it. So if you introduce this PT partition function, so it's basically a generating function for this PT numbers, then as I said, these guys are somehow in Z. And then you introduce the Gromov-Witten invariance in the normal way that we know it. So it's F, this free energy, as physicists call it, of the Gromov-Witten, which depends on lambda and Q. And of course, this F is something, I mean, the prime means that I omit the classical term. So if you, sorry, I have to, thank you. I want to write it like this. And then similar, I want to write these as a sum over the genus and GB lambda minus 2. So this we know as the string coupling and Q beta. And now, I mean, so basically our calculation has something to do in refining higher genus Gromov-Witten invariant or I mean, the same, the information that is encoded in them. And and so then the theorem that is proven for this toric case is that if you take set PT and you make a change of variables, which is sort of non-perturbative, you need to take an exponential of the string coupling of Q, then this is the ZGV that is defined above. And this is equivalent information. So if you know the one invariance, then you also know the other. And then I need to already, so I'm using the board too quickly. So, so as I said, I mean, not only that they have more defined it, so for, they also provided a way of calculating it, essentially to prove the theorem. So then you use, on the one hand, you use the vertex and the thing that was proven by Maulik, Okunkov, and Pandya-Pande, and Nekrasov, and the relation between between the Gopa-Kumar-Wafa invariance and the Kolmogorov-Witten invariants, and you show that's the Gopa-Kumar-Wafa invariants, and then you are basically done. So now I want to define, so to say, a formal refinement, which is not very deep. Basically, it just refines this formula. I should also say that these things, they are in Q and not in Z. So in some sense, the information is packaged much nicer in DT or PT invariants. So now I want to introduce, instead of lambda, two parameters, which makes this, so to say, this genus expansion more refined. And I introduce them in the following way. So I have a G and an N. Then I have E1, E2, 2G minus 2, and I have epsilon 1 plus epsilon 2 to the 2N, and then I have, so to say, things which I call, which just depend on this beta parameter, on this Kähler classes, and they are, so to say, now indexed by 2, by G and N. So, so then we also know that so if epsilon 1 is minus epsilon 2 is I gamma, then we get the old genus expansion. And there are also certain other limits which are interesting. So for instance, if you take epsilon equal to 0, then of course this term must be 0. It's basically a refinement of the genus 0 invariants. And so probably I should have pull one epsilon out before doing this. But then you get the Nekrasov-Shatashvili limit. So, so that's the formal refinement, but there's also sort of a more physical refinement, and it's the refinement of the 5D index of a five-dimensional supersymmetric index. That we can actually define with this. And well, I mean, this has, so to say, has many fathers. So this was basically Antoniadis, Gava Narain, and Taylor. And then, so this is, and then Gopa-Kumar and Wafa. And maybe most systematically, Nekrasov. And there's a sort of one paper of Nekrasov and Lakunkov, which is supposed to come out. But in some sense, we have, at least for some cases, we have taken this, so to say, we have done this already. But what is this thing? So, well, let's define some holomorphic quantity. I mean, it indicates that this object can be, in principle, non-holomorphic, but you have to take some holomorphic limit. And then you can sort of say package these quantities into this five-dimensional index. So it's a BPS index, and it is 2j, j prime. So usually people call this also j left and j right, but this is faster to write now. And then you have two parameters, q and q prime, and there is a j and J prime, and now this is integrated. So that is essentially a Schwinger loop calculation in supergravity, which leads to this expression. And it, so to say, is physically intuitive because in the Schwinger loop calculation there are quantities which running in the loop, and these quantities that run in the loop are precisely these integers that they are certainly integers by the physical definition. But they are also the integers which, so to say, are related to this Pandria-Pandit-Thomas invariant. So it's a quite physical, directly physical interpretable quantity. So the way that, I mean, when you can define this index, you can define it if you have a 5D theory. And you need an additional U1R symmetry because you have to twist the supersymmetry algebra by this in order to make an index. And to make the story short, I mean, you have this UR symmetry in the case of a Calabi-Yau compactification of M series, for instance, to five dimension, only if this guy is a non-compact. So you have a non-compact direction. And on this line bundle, you basically have this U1R symmetry. So we are not precisely sure how to do this for compact Calabi-Yaus, but for this non-compact Calabi-Yaus, you can. There's a way to understand why you can do it and why this is an index. So basically, yeah, if you don't twist the second supercharge, then you have not two scalar supercharges, and then you cannot define your index. And that's why we need this. So that's the nice formula. So of course, here you have to sort of integrate, we have to regularize this integral a little bit and to make sense out of this numerator. But you can calculate this integral, and then it counts something, as I said, it counts the BPS numbers, the physical BPS numbers, which have the quantum numbers. So they have the quantum numbers. Well, this is their mass. And then they have two spins, as it's indicated here. So these are spins of the little group in five dimensions. So this is SU2 times SU2 prime. And then you, I introduce also some parameters, which are epsilon is 1/2, epsilon 1 minus epsilon 2, and epsilon prime, which is 1/2 plus epsilon 2. And that explains then these Qs, because the Qs, they are e to the epsilon, and the q primes, they are e to the epsilon prime. So that is is the convention. And as I said, now you have a BPS degeneracy. I mean, this is the physical interpretation of this particle. So basically, this is an amplitude where you have two gravi-photons. And then you have some self-dual, gravitons, and then you have a bunch of self-dual and a bunch of anti-self-dual gravifoton like fields. And then the particles which run in the loop, they are basically giving, each of them gives a contribution to this. And of course, for physical degree reason, we think they are integers. So they, this degeneracy I call like this. And now if the physical intuition is correct, then they are not only integers, but they are positive integers. And these integers somehow want to compute. So, and as I said also shortly, so this U1R is necessary to twist J prime right, and I sort of have already, when I say about J prime, then it's already the twisted one. So then you get two nilpotent operators, Q and Q prime, and that is actually, so to say, they are necessary to make this an index, in the sense that Chamit has discussed, I guess, in the first. So that makes this an index, and and that's what we want. So, and then, as I said, so if we have M series, so one way of getting this amount of supersymmetry is to take M series and compactify it on this Calabi-Yau, which I call M, and then this U1R is related to isometries of M. Of course, in compact Calabi-Yau, we don't have isometries. But if this Calabi-Yau, so then we need local Calabi-Yau or non-compact Calabi-Yau. And the situation that I want to discuss is basically that you get the anticanonical bundle over a surface S. And for this, I want to calculate these things. So if you think, contemplate a little bit about Schwinger's calculation that he did in order to solve this integral, then you will immediately find some nice properties of of the expansion, which, let me summarize this. So just do this integral, and then you find that what I call F holomorphic epsilon epsilon q, so then it becomes actually something like n, so now I single out this individual contributions, where beta is still not equal zero in the charge lattice is j h2 of m, and then these ones, they are a half integer because they refer to spin numbers, and then you get a function j j, so it's a universal function which depends on this epsilon, and of course q beta. And now you can find that, well, I mean, introduce Chebyshev polynomials of the second kind, poles of second kind. Then you can write this phi jj prime in terms of them, and it is something like minus 1 to the 2 j plus j prime, and then you get these polynomials. So it's a Cauch hyperbolicus of xk, and then u2j plus 1 of Cauch hyperbolicus xk, and then you get an xk over k, and in the denominator you just get a Cauch xk squared minus Cauch x prime k, and this this thing runs just over k equals 0 to infinity. So now, I mean, if we know that these things come, I mean, without knowing too much, but just knowing that this ng somehow related to curves of higher genus, we can use the adjunction formula. And the adjunction formula would tell us that NGG is zero, so there are some bounds. If, and they are polynomial, I mean, actually quadratic polynomials. So if 2J is greater than a quadratic polynomial in the degrees, and likewise 2J prime is greater than a quadratic polynomial in B. So for instance, if S is P2, then you get the simplest local Calabi-Yau, then you find that this, there's of course only one degree in P2, and this is this quadratic polynomial I can write down then, let's say it's D minus 1, D minus 2, so this is the degree, and then P2 of D is 1 D plus 3 D. So this, these are bound, and this means something good. Then for fixed, basically for fixed q beta. So if I fix the degree, I can, with a finite number of these information here, I can calculate the whole series, even the non-perturbative series. So so it means that there's a for fixed b, you can write f as being, let's say, b going just to this fixed b, b from 0, well, b less than b. And then these things are then completely known. Q. So there's an upper triangular property, which sort of, so these are completely fixed. From a finite fng. But otherwise, if, I mean, because you make this change where you make the exponential, I mean, in this formula that that Pandya Pandit Thomas proved, then otherwise it would be not the case, but so you have this information. Okay, so then let me now say a little bit how these people calculated it. So so this is the calculation which is yet not refined, and then so I say a little bit about the non-refined calculation of Pandria, Panda, and Thomas, and then I say how they calculate, how you refine it, and how you get the second parameter. So it's a so to say a motivic version of this Pandria, Panda, Thomas invariance, and how you do this concretely in the toric case. I want to spend a couple of words. So let's say a stable pair invariance on, well, via the torus action. So we want to have some torus action in a three-dimensional space. And this, for instance, would be a good example because this is completely toric. And we want to use localization with respect to this torus action and then do it. So basically, you look at the exact sequence, which is like this, and then S to F, and then there is a Q. And so basically, what I want to sort of describe torically are this data. So C now is a torus invariant curve. And as in the talk of, as in the talk of Jeton, you basically have just a cylinder, which is torus invariant. And then this Q, this is zero dimensional. So it's a zero dimensional fixed locus. So it's a, first of all, it's a zero dimensional co-kernel of S. And this is supported on a fixed point, of the torus action. So that makes it, so to say, possible. So if you to sort of say do all of this combinatorial, and so in an affine patch, let's say, then you can write the torus action just as, well, you have these three generators, and then they act on the coordinate of this affine patch, which I call x, just by tx. So these are C star multiplications. So this is the coordinates of the patch. And then you sort of can represent these things by the following data. So you basically, I mean, in our case, since the one direction is always non-compact, we never have curves which go into the non-compact direction, so they don't support any of the stable pairs. So you get basically a picture like this. So let me draw this here. So this is, so the cylinders of a certain degree, they are represented by boxes, by cylinders of boxes with a certain degree. And then they end somewhere here, let's say. And now I have to be more artistic than I can do. So this is basically now a second cylinder which comes out here. So let's suppose this cylinder is just two boxes. And then it goes out here and meets this cylinder somewhere, I mean, in some lines, which I essentially cannot draw. So it meets this this line here. And then, so these partitions here, they support the degree of the curve. So for instance, the one curve would have here partition six, would have degree six, and then this one would have degree two, and so on. So this immediately becomes the degree. So this becomes the degree of these fixed curves. And then how are this Q represented? So this Q, the Q is, let me draw this a little nicer. So you see these two boxes, these two cylinders, they somehow come together here. And then there are negative boxes. And these negative boxes, they extend here. And they are, so to say, they are associated to the fixed point. And this negative box is basically is a toric representation of this co-kernel. And they are, so to say, when you want now to have a beta and an N, then you sort of say make two cylinders of the associated degree, and then you stack a number of boxes. So here the Q here, let's say, would be, I don't know, this would be maybe four boxes. So this would be four. So if these are four boxes which I stuck there. And now the point of Pandya, Panda, and Thomas is that they sort of manage put all this they put the associated deformation and the obstruction bundle just in a combinatorical formulas in terms of these boxes, then they obtain essentially the result. So this is very similar, like we did for the topological vertex, only that that the interpretation is that leads immediately to integers. So if you now want to, for instance, do this geometry P2, then you have to sort of have this, so to say, this image of the moment map under the torus action, and then you have, so to say, to put here one vertex of this type, here another vertex, here a third vertex, and then, so to say, consider all the box configuration which have the topological, which add up to the topological data, and then you get the tangent bundle, so the deformations minus the obstruction. You can get very explicitly in terms of certain, in terms of Laurent polynomials which are associated to these boxes in the torus weights. So something like this. Now this is, so to say, VA. And then, so this is, so to say, from the three vertices that I would have here in this picture. And then you sum over the edges between these vertices, and so to say, these are now Laurent polynomials in the T weights in TI, and at the end you, so to say, sum all this stuff up, which, so now if we have P1, it's just 1 degree, and then you sum this up, all this configuration, so that the sum of the curves is D, and the sum of all the negative boxes that you can put is N, and then you take the order zero coefficient in T, and that is the result. So now the sum is, so to say, formal. So now you take all this I and sum it up and take the zero order coefficient, and that's what it does. So this is, and then Pandya, Panda, and Thomas proved, and by the same, comparing this to the vertex formal, that this gives also the Gromov-Witten invariance. But now come to the decisive point. So how do you do the refinement? So now we come to the refinement. Of the PT invariance. And that is done using a virtual Bialynicki-Birula decomposition. So this is of this moduli space P N M beta. So so here it's, of course, the main point is basically that you have a U1 action on this moduli space, or you have even a C star action acting on P, let's say just P. Let's note this just P for the moment being. And and now you can make this let me first recall the classical Bialynicki-Birula decomposition, and then try to give the virtual formula. Oh, there's always a blackboard. I know I cannot access it. So basically, it's a sort of a cell decomposition of this moduli space, which introduces a motivic parameter. And it's essentially done by as follows. So this works for P as a smooth projective variety. And so it's basically also assumed that it has a with a finite number of fixed points. Points, and then you basically construct, you get a first of decomposition of the tangent space at the fixed points, and this can be done by the character of this C star action. So you get this, in this case, is a C star action. By the way, you can also generalize it if you just have you get more refinements if you have additional group actions on your moduli space, you can do this as well. And so we decompose it into T plus, which is chi greater 0 T chi P. And then we have T minus, which is chi less than 0 T pi K. And so we call this dimension. So it has dimension of this component is d plus, and here d minus. And now this induces a cell decomposition, on P. And then so basically the cells are UP X in P, and then you take the limit of T goes to infinity, of T goes to zero in this convention, and T times X is the fixed point. So basically, it so to say stratifies the space into things which can be seen from the fixed point, and then you take the absolute motive. Of P as P is the sum of P. Now here's the fixed points in. This is the fixed point under the C star action, and then you get L dP plus. Where L is the absolute motive, of C. And now we can, do this for the real case. Even for the virtual moduli space. So where is the? Did I put this here? So if P has a symmetric obstruction theory, as in our case, then there is a theorem of Berendt, Brian, and Balazs Szendrói. 09 that you can decompose P virtual in this following form. So this is minus L minus 1/2 N, and then P, and this is just P in the fixed point set of this moduli space. So this is Well, I mean, now I have to define this. I mean, this is basically L to the minus 1/2. And then you get a TP plus minus DP minus. So you get this grading of P is the moduli space. Equal, yeah, yeah. So basically, I want. Here should be also. So this. This is okay. So now this is the expression that that this guy's devised for. Well, I mean, basically, the whole thing is they had this formula of minus one to the L. So maybe it's. I think this, you can forget about this for a second. So, no, I mean, I want to have this as a as a polynomial in L.
It's a polynomial. Yeah.
And then, yeah, okay, so maybe this is the wrong way of writing it. But then this is this, this is the virtual, well, this is, so to say, the decomposition with respect to this motive, and then the whole calculation, so to say, that you have to do is you take P beta of L, and so now you can define this refined Pandya-Panda Thomas, and you basically now integrate this over this P M beta vir L, which I defined here, and this has this structure of fixed points. And then this gets, so this induces a grading in the calculation that Pandya-Panda and Thomas did. And the grading is actually invariant. So the grading is invariant of the choice of this U1 action. You just have to have one. And then, well, it so this restricts, of course. So this restricts. Well, I mean, this restricts the so this needing of the grading restricts this to local Calabi-Yau. The calculation to local Calabi-Yau. I said this before. And and then finally, what you have to do then. You just identify Q left that I introduced before with L. That's all what you have to do, and then you get the N B J J L. So that is basically the relation to the physics notation that you just take this motive, the polynomials in this motive become now polynomials in. I mean this. Yeah, you have to one. So I mean, this is the same integral like before. The older structure is here. So now, basically, what you have to do is you have to take this combinatorial calculation you have to do these things, and then you have to. Okay. So the notation is not pleasing you, I guess, because physics notation. Okay, so then now I come a little bit to the local Calabi-Yau this is basically now the paper with Maximilian. These are applications. So now you can define it, and as I said, you can also define it in more general cases when you have more than one U1 action. You can refine this further. And let me now give away brief introduction. So how many minutes I have? 10 minutes? Okay, that sounds good. So let me say a little bit about the geometry. So this is going to be a nice set of geometries because they are, so to say, have an intrinsic Lie structure in it, which also plays a role in the flavor and the gauge symmetry in F3. So I take this S to be Delpezzo surfaces, and these Delpezzo surfaces, they can either be the half K3, or they can be they can be D and P2. I mean, these are blowups of P2 in n points, and then there's also a case which I not discuss into the great detail, but there's also P1 times P1. And so what is these? What are these things? They are smooth rational surfaces with ample canonical class. And they enjoy this classification, which you can immediately see how this works. So, you can take the arithmetic genus and use some index theorem to make it. This is just like this, and that is one because sort of the Hodge diamond is somehow this n plus one, and then here is zero in particular. So this one is just a one. And then, but on the other hand, from the index theorem, this is like 1 over 12 C1 plus C and integrated over the surface. And then you can have the signature. So they have the signature theorem. So this would be the self-dual minus the anti-self-dual things. And and this one is 1 over 3. I mean, this is another index theorem, the Hirzebruch index theorem. And you get this one. And so you see immediately that this one is something like 1 minus n for these blow-up cases. And then the Euler number, of course, is the Euler number of this dnp 2 is just 3 plus n. And then b2 of dnp, as I said, this is just n plus 1. And so you see that H2 of DNP over Z is a lattice of signature 1 comma n. And now you can actually work out what this is. So you can write down the canonical class of this. And so this is made by the hyperplane class of the P1 and then the blow-up points, and this can be go from 1 to n in the definition. And so, so this is the hyperplane class. Hyperplane of P2, and these are the exceptional divisors. And we have also the intersection numbers that these are all negative, and this is, of course, 1. And the rest is 0. And then you can see that this positiveness of k now restricts the whole construction to n less than 8. So we get, in this moment, this class becomes negative because 9 minus 8 is still positive, but for 9 minus 9, you get it only semi-positive, and that is the half K3. And these things have, so to say, this Delpezzo surface, they are elliptic pencils with a base point, and they have also a nice Lie group structure, so you can introduce lambda to exhibit this Lie group structure. So this is out of, so lambda is just this is just H2SZ, and then you introduce another lambda, which is orthogonal on the canonical class, and this is even in self-dual, And in particular, the determinant of lambda is 9 minus n. So, so if n is 8, then it's the unique even self-dual lattice. So you get immediately, so you can make sort of say a little list. So lambda for n is 0 until n is 8. And then n is 9, that would be the half K3. These other are all the del Pezzos. And then you get a certain lattice structure. So let me just label this by the Lie group. So here there is nothing. And then there's nothing. And then there's A1. And there's A1 times A2. And then there's A4. And then there's D5. And now I have to keep up that the E7 goes, the E8 goes here. And then there is finally affine E8 lattice. And also the Weyl group of G acts on lambda. And as I said, so Bn is an elliptic pencil. With base point, for n less equal 8, but then for n equal 9, you blow up this base point. So basically, it looks like first it looks like this, where there is a Riemann elliptic surface, but then you blow it up, and then you get a nice you get an elliptic vibration. So this is an elliptic vibration over P1. And you have 12 E1 singularities. And that's basically why it's called half K3, because the K3 would have 24. And so this play, for instance, a role in the stable degeneration limit of F3, this half K3. So that's why I'm sort of say interested in these cases. I have to speed up a bit. So now let me just summarize. There are a couple of them which are toric. So S toric. So this is basically due to Butterev. I think in this thesis is a small thing. So you have, so to say, 16 reflexive polyhedra. And so there are, like, for instance, the one of P2. And then, well, there are a couple of them. One looks like this, which has 2 points. And you can understand this as actually a degenerate E8. So that's why, that's so to say necessary, these remarks, to construct a mirror, which is more carefully done in the paper. So this is, for instance, E7, degenerate E7. And that is more or less. Well, I mean, the point is, toically, you cannot realize all the scalar classes, so you have to blow down some of them. But still, you can get at least the degenerate cases. And from there, you use these degenerate cases to construct the mirror, and then you deform it to get the most the real mirror. So that is the strategy that we use in order to get the mirror. And then there is a case which is E6. This looks like this, has 3 there, and so on. So for instance, this one has the gauge group. This is E6, but it's degenerate. So what it means, you have only A2 to the 2 open, which comes from this point on the edge. But now what we want to construct this mirror. So we basically want to construct this guy. And first, you are guided simply by Butterev's construction and saying this is nothing than the Newton polynomial of this polyhedra. And that is, of course, correct for the toric cases. But then for the non-toric cases, so basically for n less than 3, you get a generic del Pezzo. But so here, for instance, here we have so to say, the number of Kähler classes is, of course, 4. And here the number of Kähler classes is 5, why it should be 9. And here it should be 8. And then here the real number of Kähler classes is 6. So this actually is the first case which sort of matches, but it's still degenerate. And that means that these points are not in general position if you blow up. So you blow up, so to say, too close to the next point, and therefore they are not. But for n equal less than 3, you get generic del Pezzos. And now you can use basically the Weyl group invariance it acts on parameters which we call mass parameters. And so these masses come in characters of the Weyl group, or even of the affine Weyl group. So this is an observation due to Loyenga. I mean, he doesn't use masses, but just this deformation. And then, using this action of the Weyl group and the knowledge of the degenerate cases, you can get the general case of the mirror. So basically, we use Butterworth's construction on a toric mirror, and then we use a little bit the symmetries to get the general mirror. And all these general mirrors, they will be genus one curve with a bunch of masses organized in this Weyl characters, and they are quite nice forms. So it follows from this that this HXP U of M, so there is one, so to say, a complex modulus, and then this mass parameters, or some people call it not regularizable parameters, they come in addition, but this is the complex modulus, and this is what we call the masses. And this H in particular is in Weierstrass form. So this is in the form, or you can bring it into the Weierstrass form quite easily. This is, so to say, done with standard algorithms, how to bring things into Weierstrass form. And then you get these curves in the Weierstrass form, and from then on, so to say, we use all the work which was done by Ming-Xing and myself in 2008, so with Ming-Xing and Kashanipur. So basically, the idea is now that that you can reconstruct this FG, a certain meromorphic function over the modulized space of this thing, with this generalized holomorphic anomaly equation. So what is, I mean, you need general holomorphic anomaly equation plus a certain degeneration at the conifold locus, at the generic conifold locus, and that actually fix it. And if you have enough mass parameters, then the conifold isn't generic enough, so you can actually do it. So what you introduce, I mean, now you have, I have defined G2 and G3, you define this object, E4, E6, and then you observe, first of all, that d F00, so this would be the genus zero instantons, in this flat coordinates, which are defined as one chord, I mean, basically as the acycle coordinate of this torus, of this mirror torus, that this guy is given as just minus 1 over 2 pi I, and that is the universal tau parameter of this curve. So everything that is relevant for genus zero, you can read from the tau parameter of the curve. And of course, then we need, for the holomorphic anomaly equation, we need some more initial data beside F00. We need F01 and F10. So this refers to the introduction of this general epsilon decomposition that I had. So then we need here some initial data. So this has a logarithmic singularity, and this is the metric on the Weyl-Patterson. This is the Weyl-Patterson metric of the Riemann surface, and then we get some exponents here that we have actually to fix, and we fix them by vanishing conditions of the holomorphic curve. So these exponents ai are fixed by some n j j beta equals zero by some, and so this is so using a little bit of classical geometry of the Del-Pezzo surfaces, and then we have also this one. This is similar, so we have the it vanishes always at the discriminant with a certain thing, and then we have u b naught, and then m e b I, and this one is just holomorphic. This is non-holomorphic, and I can add that also these are fixed by such things. And then we have an anti-holomorphic generator. And this is X is E hat. So this is the Eisenstein series, which is, so to say, diverges. It's first making regularized, and then it's non-holomorphic. But if you add an unholomorphic part, then it becomes also moduli again. So the regularization spoils the holomorphicity, and then it can be cured by adding an unholomorphic part. And then, so to say, the holomorphic anomaly equation that generalized, if you wish, that I mentioned before by Walcher and Kreffel and Mingxing and myself, they sort of give then the answer together with this gap condition that I also should mention. So this gives a general form. So this is the discriminant and this goes like this, 3g plus 2n minus 3, and then comes this unholomorphic generator, and then some pk gn, and these are, so to say, holomorphic, and they are a polynomial in U, they are polynomials in U, and since this has some regularity properties, also if U goes to infinity, they cannot be arbitrary high polynomial in U. And it turns out that for k equal 0, they are fixed by the generalized holomorphic anomaly equation. But for k equal 0, they are fixed by the gap condition, at the generic conifold, at the generic discriminant. And so everything is fixed. And so now I come, maybe in the last 5 minutes or so, I come to the applications. So this sort of is a prescription that so to say recursively defines this FGN as a function of the Keller parameter. So this is basically what I called previously Q. So there the distinction between the M and the N is not really relevant. And once I got that, I can sort of say calculate the F, the N, this integer numbers, this BPS invariance. And now, of course, because of this very nice group structure that we have, these elliptic singularities, we can now associate to them some invariants which sort of have the group structure in it and are sort of nice. So, well, in the applications. So in 4D, so you have a field theory, then as I said, you get the things which have flavor symmetry greater than D4. So you get analytic expression for the Nekrasov partition function. And as I said, for this case, it's not easy to do it otherwise. I mean, it's better to do it with these modular expressions. And then let's put an example. So this would be the E8 Del-Pezzo. So then, so we get some sort of numbers. So I want them to be integers, so I take 2. J and J left, J right and J left. And here, so to say, I take D equal 1. And so the typical feature is that this table ends. So this is the thing that was the quadratic bound in D. And now you get, not very surprisingly, you get something which is organized by the Weyl orbits of the E8. And you get this number, and the rest of the numbers are zero. And then if you do this for d equal 2, you just get certain corrections. So these are the n, n d equal 1 j j. And for d equal 2, you get a couple of more, then because this quadratic bound leaves more space to you. So, but you can also see immediately that they also decompose in the Weyl orbits of this group. So here you get these ones. And yeah. So why is this, so to say, nice? I mean, well, of course, the 248, this is just the Weyl orbit W1, which is 240, and then 8 times 0. So this is, but this fills out the whole representation of E8. And somehow we, I mean, if you look at this from the point of view of heterotic or type 2 string duality, you should expect that this actually has to do with the gauge enhancement of this of the theory. And it, you see the gauge bosons, and it did sort of corrections to this thing in so to say, massive excitations above them. And that's really what you get. So let me, so to say, organize this still in three parts. So one part is the tensionless string. So the tensionless string is a thing that in the Horava-Witten construction, so to say, emerges if you move an M5 brain to the end of the world E8 brain. And this tensionless string is actually was conjectured to be the BPS states of the tensionless string was conjectured to be counted by the Petzo surface. So it's natural to ask what happens now with the refinement. So the tensionless string is one application. So you have an M5 brain, and you have this end of the world, as they call it. I mean, this is an interval, so you have an end of the world E8 brain, and then this tensionless string are basically stretching between this one, and it it actually the spectrum in 5D is given by a shrinking del Petzo surface, by a shrinking deep 8 P2. And now I can, so to say, calculate the refined spectrum. So that gives me, so to say, all the, so then you get an, in five dimensions, you get a tensionless string, you get a higher spin theory, and all the spin BPS states of this BPS states of the higher spin theory in five dimension are now accounted. And this, so to say, solves a puzzle that we had in the paper with Kumrum, that when you just take the unrefined things, they are negative numbers. You cannot interpret them as really a state. Are now counted. And then finally, I want to have so basically the NJJD literally become these states, the degeneracies of the states, of these states. And then, well, I mean, this is more a little bit more speculative, but if you look how they construct the exceptional groups in F3 by PQ strings, then essentially, well, they have certain, so to say, mutation rules. I mean, you know that that PQ strings can end only on PQ7 brains, and you have certain mutation rules. So if this is a branch which comes from a PQ7 brain, then this, so to say, move, then you have a change in the consistency that the string, so as you move the string around this cut, then you get this change, and then finally you can get such situations. And people like Gabadil and Zwiebach, they have by these rules, they found, so to say, the 240 streets that you need. And then there's another paper by Mikhailov, Nekrasov, and Sethi that says, okay, this is basically should be invariants which are associated to certain holomorphic curves. So basically now if you sort of have an S1 vibration as an F3 you have over this, and this S1 vibration is a certain cycle in the torus of F3, which sort of degenerates at this PQ7 brains, then you get sort of say, you get a curve. So and they argue that it's a holomorphic curve if you pick the polarization of this K3 correctly. And basically, so what we think that of course, this number, so to say, are the BPS states of the PQ string. I mean, at least, this I don't understand completely, but there are some hints that it could explain the gauge 3 enhancement. And maybe with this, I should also stop.